You're listening to the Special Care Series. This program is brought to you by the MassMutual Oregon Special Care Planning Team. For more information and resources about special needs planning, please visit us at oregon.massmutual.com.
9, last one. 10! Last set. Switch it up. 1.
My name is Ryan Lockard. I'm the owner and head trainer of Specialty Athletic Training here in Portland, Oregon.
Ryan is a former football player that now works as a private trainer out of Lewis and Clark College. But he's far from a typical trainer. He serves clients with special needs, like Alice, who is working in the weight room today with Ryan.
Done. Good work.
Ryan first started working with the special needs community in 2007. Needing only a few extra credits in order to graduate from college, he signed himself up for an independent study, working with the boy on the autism spectrum.
And I learned a lot in that process. I learned a lot from his mom and, you know, his therapist and stuff like that. And I really saw the need for exercise and fitness. And really, I knew I didn't want to be a one-on-one aide the rest of my life.
After playing pro football overseas for a few years after graduating, Ryan returned home to continue his work with the special needs clients. There was a real need for it, given that the obesity rates among the special needs populations are higher than neurotypical kids by about 7%. There's a multitude of reasons for why this might be the case, the largest of which is the cost of paying for all sorts of other therapies likely takes priority over physical health and education. Some other reasons might be a decline of PE in school and, in general, an aversion to sports and fitness among children with special needs. So Ryan's focus became how to make exercise fun for kids, not just turning them into athletes.
A lot of parents say, we love to see little Johnny play football or basketball. And so I really try to redirect that and say, you know, my main thing is I want little Johnny to enjoy exercise and enjoy fitness. If they don't enjoy it, it's not going to be a lifelong, you know, it's not going to be part of their daily life. And that's what really needs to happen, you know, and really try to teach these kids how to work out and enjoy it, whether it's in the gym or at home, and be able to do it independently. You know, if I always tell the parents, if your kid's not having fun or not looking forward to coming to see us, especially athletic training, then we're not doing our job. That's truly what I believe in. I really think that each exercise program needs to be, you know, unique and individualized for each client and make it where they have a choice and make it fun for them.
Ryan's approach is to take things in small steps, to slowly work towards a place where kids can feel confident in their abilities.
There's a lot of progression that can go into it and really build up their self-confidence where all of a sudden they're starting doing a couple of agility drills and they're real confident. Perfect. Well, it's time to try something a little bit tougher. And I always explain to them, hey, we're going to do a lot of stuff that you can do really well, but at the same time, I want to challenge you a little bit. And so don't feel bad if you mess up. We'll keep doing it a little bit and we'll keep practicing. And then all of a sudden it's going to become automatic. And, you know, I think explaining it that way really makes them understand better and feel better about themselves that, hey, this is tough and it's okay to fail. I'll get it eventually.
When you step back, it becomes clear that physical fitness is only one half of the work that Ryan is doing. The other is helping clients realize that they have the confidence and strength to achieve things that they never thought possible. Which brings us to today's topic, advocacy and empowerment. It's something that kids and adults on the spectrum often struggle with. Social communication doesn't always come easy to those with special needs. So in this show, we'll look at how some organizations and people in the special needs community are working to change that, to become empowered, and to advocate for themselves and for others. I'm Eric Spent. Stay tuned. In our first episode, we heard from John and Karen Krecha about their autism scouting program. But that's not all they do. They also run a nonprofit called Autism Empowerment. Their mission is to help make life better and more meaningful for kids and adults with autism. It's an ambitious goal for sure, but one that they believe is absolutely necessary. It started when their two sons were diagnosed on the spectrum.
For ourselves personally, after the diagnosis process, we were given very little information and extremely little support from the organization which diagnosed the children. Essentially, we were given pamphlets and said, oh, you know, come back in a couple weeks if you have any questions, and you're on your way. Welcome to autism.
John and Karen didn't want that to happen to anyone else, so they created a network of resources that eventually became Autism Empowerment. And it became clear to them that helping others understand autism was a key part of their mission. One of the primary things to understand was that each diagnosis is different.
There's a saying in the autism community that if you've met one person on the spectrum, you've met one person on the autism spectrum. And what that means is that it's not one size fits all. Not everybody is going to react the same to therapies or strategies or teachings or trainings. And so when we're working with adults, trying to let them, you know, how do you work with kids on the autism spectrum? Or I know one child and they do this, and I know someone else and they do that, but this isn't working. It's like, okay, let's just take a few deep breaths and say, look, you know, everybody's different.
That's what we tell people, be accepting, get into the person's world, rather than all the time that they have to conform to everyone else's expectations. Why not conform to their world? I think that's very important, because then they feel, again, accepted. You know, they feel more empowered. They feel, oh, here's someone who cares.
People will come and they'll say, gosh, I don't know how to deal with this quote-unquote behavior. And they don't realize that what's happening is a sensory issue. Like the reason a child might be melting down or shutting down or acting out is because they may be sensitive or oversensitive to stimuli that's coming in their environment. And really, that could be smell, it could be taste, it could be hearing, it could be a combination of different things. It's like living life with the volume turned up.
Understanding sensory challenges can be tough for those who don't have them. Karen says they suggest that people become brain detectives and figure out what the triggers might be that lead up to a meltdown.
Because if you start to see the same things happening, that, you know, every time there's loud noise, well, next thing you know, Johnny is, you know, covering his ears, screaming and acting in a way that isn't considered appropriate, you're going to realize that there's something that's triggering that.
Another tool that John and Karen use is to actually simulate hypersensitivity with neurotypical people.
For example, we'll have people put on headphones and put cotton in the headphones, have someone talk to them either softly or in a different language. That way you have the translation of communication or the communication barriers that could be perceived.
Or, you know, for me, being on the spectrum myself, I tend to have challenges with being in a room and hearing all sorts of different noise going on at the same time. So being able to focus in on one conversation is very difficult. So one of the things that we will do is we will have people look straight at me, try to, you know, to talk, and then we'll have all of these different noises going on right near their ears and see how easy or difficult it is for them to be able to actually concentrate on something.
Dexterity issues tends to be very a big issue. So what we have people do is put on big gloves and then have them try to tie their shoes with big gloves on, or put together a Mr. Potato Head with big gloves on. It's very difficult because it's a fine motor type of function, but with obviously a big obstruction.
Making people wear earplugs and big gloves doesn't just help others become aware of how difficult certain things are. It helps to bridge the gap between assuming and understanding. Another way John and Karen promote this is by integrating special needs communities with the neurotypical population through events. One example is the Easter Egg Hunt for Acceptance of All Abilities, which is a lot like it sounds. It's hosted at a small stadium where John and Karen invite 25 different organizations to set up a booth for the parents at the event.
They had an opportunity to be able to talk to different agencies, get different resources, be able to make connections. And then the kids also had opportunities to do other fun things too, see a magician, have their picture with an Easter bunny. It became more of a family and community acceptance event, which was just a really cool thing because we noticed afterwards that agencies were coming to us, thanking us, giving us this opportunity, wanting to participate in this again, because it was this real feeling of community. We all belong. Everybody could go to this event and be who they were and not have to look around and worry, is someone looking at me? They could just be themselves and be authentic and let their light shine. And it was just to be a part of that, to be in the stadium and look around and see people just being able to be themselves was just the neatest thing, and an experience that we want to be able to repeat over and over again in a lot of different capacities. So
this one lady came up to me afterwards and said, thank you so much for putting this on. During the event, her son just had this huge meltdown and basically had sat down and just started screaming. And he said, people passed by, smiled, and were all accepting. And it was just, and she felt like she belonged.
Sometimes in the autism community, individuals tend to just stay within their immediate environment and with the same group of people. Events like the Easter egg hunt can help individuals and families expand past their comfort zone. This event also helps to connect neurotypical populations to those on the spectrum, which leads us into one of the four key pillars that autism empowerment promotes, the first of which is to accept.
That means self-acceptance, being able to accept yourself for who you are, where you're at this point in time. It also means social acceptance, so people in the community accepting you where you're at. That doesn't mean stagnation. It doesn't mean you accept where you're at and you stay there. It means that if you're going through challenges and struggles, that you're aware of that, but you're open also to being able to help and improve your life. And that's where we get into the enrichment, accept, enrich.
Enrich is their next pillar, followed by inspire. John and Karen work to enrich and inspire by providing all sorts of resources, whether it's panel discussions, blogs, workshops, or their own podcast called Autism Empowerment Radio. They're also keen on sharing small success stories within the community.
To hear things like, my child made their first friend, and they learned to tie a knot. Just some things that people tend to take for granted, hidden curriculum types of items, social skills, and things that I would say the neurotypical population just accumulates on their own. But for parents that are taking care of children that have autism or other special needs, these types of things are huge milestones, and it's very inspiring. We believe that a combination of the three, when you have acceptance, when you have enrichment, when you have inspiration, and you have those things together, you're in a position to be able to empower yourself and others to a greater success in life, and life being more meaningful, being more authentic.
The last pillar is empowerment. And this is the one that comes from the endless effort to promote acceptance, inspiration, and enrichment. Getting there takes a lot of time, a lot of patience, and a lot of work. But that's why John and Karen do the work that they do, to get people and communities supporting each other instead of what John calls the competition of suffering.
I think there's a thing in the autism community called the competition of suffering. Well, my child does this. Well, my child does this, or my so-and-so does this. And it's trying to bridge that gap to bring these people together and say, it doesn't matter if Johnny or Jane do this or that, or maybe not verbal, or, you know, may still have, you know, different issues around potty training or whatever. We need to come together to find a solution, to work together and find the strength and find the ability in the child and the adult, and work toward the ability and not the disability.
Yeah, and not to minimize the struggles that people go through. And I think that's what a lot of times people who have children that are more severely impacted in certain ways say, oh, well, you just don't get it. You don't understand my life and what I'm going through. You're quote-unquote high-functioning or whatnot. And I say, well, you have no idea what I'm going through either. None of us. We only live in our own heads. We, you know, that goes whether you're on the spectrum or not. So rather than just competing, let's just kind of come together and be honest and say, okay, we have struggles in certain areas. What can we do to be able to empower each other? And, you know, I think that when we do, it's going to be a better world for all of us.
This program is brought to you by MassMutual Oregon and their special care planning team. MassMutual Oregon developed a resource network to support and connect the special needs community through information sharing, events, and activities. For more information, contact MassMutual Oregon at oregon.massmutual.com or find us on Facebook under MassMutual Oregon Special Care. You can also contact our special care program manager, Alyssa Bosley, at 503-542-9477.
Up until this point, a lot of the focus has been on children with special needs. And really, that's what many special needs resources often depict on pamphlets and websites. A Google image search of the word autism brings up pages and pages of kids with toys or puzzles. But it goes without saying that kids grow up to be adults, and that's an area of special needs care that's easy to overlook. Our last two stories look at how kids with special needs grow up into independent adults and how advocacy and empowerment is so crucial to that transition. We'll start with Rob Thompson, a 25-year-old man with autism that works as a videographer for a company called Insight.
Insight is spelled I-N-C-I-G-H-T, and we help people with disabilities get resources in college education and employment.
Insight was founded on the mission of providing resources for self-empowerment to those with special needs. One of their core philosophies is a word called handicrap. In simple terms, handicrap is defined as a limiting belief adopted as reality.
A limiting belief has to do with the limits you are putting on yourself, and the unfair judgment is judgments that other people are putting on you. And this applies not just to people with disabilities, but to everybody, because everybody in the world can claim to be guilty for putting certain limits on themselves or telling people they can't do this because of dot, dot, dot. So if someone were to tell me, I don't know if you'll be able to do well at this college because, you know, you have Asperger's syndrome, and I know I want you to be successful, but I just don't think they'll accept certain things. I don't know if they'll provide some of this stuff. That's handicrap. Now, another example of handicrap is, I don't know if I can get this job. I don't know if they'll accept me, you know, or simply just saying, man, why do I keep bumping into that door? Why do I keep tripping on that step? Man, I'm just going to keep doing that over and over again. That's handicrap.
Really, what handicrap is all about is advocacy and empowerment. But those concepts that Rob now embraces took him a while to figure out while he was growing up. His journey from childhood to becoming a college student to becoming a working adult all happened gradually.
It was all in baby steps. It all started from, you know, when I was in middle school to high school to college years and up to now. And I needed, you know, I needed to learn things in increments. I didn't always know what to do independently. I needed to get help from a lot of people. So the biggest challenge for me was getting rid of my stubbornness in terms of, you know, I know exactly what I'm doing. See, the way I like to think of running my life is everything's a puzzle.
For Rob, and really just about everyone that's grown up, the process of figuring out the puzzle started as a teenager. But of course, he really wasn't on his own.
I noticed that when he was in elementary school, I was the one that did everything.
That's Colleen, Rob's mother.
Advocacy, Rob advocating for himself, was something that I needed to push him into doing. It was never something that he would choose to do on his own. When we were in public situations, it was a teaching of how to act appropriately and things that you could do when you're at home that you don't do in public. And there might have been some things that if people saw him and didn't know him well enough that thought he wasn't capable of doing certain things. I went through stages where something might be all about autism. I'm just learning everything. I'm living and breathing autism. I'm thinking about all the things that are limiting instead of thinking about the strengths. And then we'll go through periods of, you know what? That is not what we're about. We're not about autism. We're about Rob and Colleen, and I think about all the strengths that he has.
As Rob grew up and started to become his own person, a big challenge for Colleen was transferring responsibility and advocacy to Rob.
But once we hit college, that was where things really changed drastically, and where here I did all the advocating. We go into the Office of Disabilities, and it was pretty much, Mom, you're out of here. You don't have a place here. And so I had to just sit back and watch. Well, and if you think about, if I'm honest, the person that probably puts the most limits on him is me. And that's just something I have to realize. Okay, let it go. I mean, there's some areas where I'm pushing him to have independence where he might not want it, maybe more in the responsibility end. But then in just having more freedoms, I have to give that too, because when you're raising a child, it starts off where they have no freedom and no responsibility. And then as they grow, it gets to the point where the freedom and responsibility is all theirs. And so if I'm expecting more responsibilities of them, I have to give them more freedoms too. And that trust is a little bit hard as a mom, but he's certainly proven that he's able to do it. Yet now when he's at Insight and in this workforce, he is surrounded by other adults who are pouring into his life and coaching him and challenging him, doing all those things that I did or that teachers and coaches did before, and I'm watching him just flourish in his independence because it's someone other than mom that's giving the challenges.
And over time, I've had to get rid of pride and just say, okay, now's the time I need help. I can be really reluctant to listen to other people's advice. I can be extremely stubborn in a lot of things. It all comes back to that life is a jigsaw puzzle. I don't want anybody's help helping me figure out this life that I need to live. And I made it my New Year's resolution to listen to more people, or at least be open to what they have to say. And if I don't agree with them, then okay, then we'll just have to do some cooperating, and we'll just have to balance everything out. But I at least have to give other people my ear.
Rob's journey to independence has had bumps in the road, just like anyone else. Now, as a 25-year-old starting a career and still learning to advocate for himself, he says he has advice for his 10-year-old self.
And learn how to advocate for yourself, because the way the world works is not everything's going to fall right in your lap. That's not how the world works. You need to learn how to be more independent and learn what works for you, not what works for me, what works for you. And once you find that out, stick with that plan.
Our closing story today starts with another organization dedicated to empowerment, the Autism Society of Oregon.
Hi, my name is Toby Rates, and I'm the executive director of the Autism Society of Oregon. Our mission at ASO is to empower people on the autism spectrum and their families and caregivers to lead the most meaningful, productive lives possible.
Toby has two sons with autism and took over as the executive director of ASO in 2010. A lot of her efforts go towards helping parents get acclimated to a new diagnosis.
What is helpful in talking to parents who have a newly diagnosed child is the fact that I am a parent of children on the autism spectrum. So they're talking to someone who's been there. My children were diagnosed 10 and 7 years ago now, and I remember it vividly, and where they were and the emotions they're feeling. So knowing that they're talking to another parent, I think, gives people a bit of a feeling of comfort, I think. Even just finding out that you're not the only person who has a 9-year-old who's not potty trained. That community and support and learning from other parents, that's enormously helpful. With the whole goal being that, I look at my goal as the executive director of ASO is that, very personally, I have two children who are to some level, more or less, going to need some supports and help for the rest of their lives. They're going to be productive individuals in their own way, but they're going to need some supports. And I'm not always going to be here to give it for them. And I'm well aware of that. All things go as they should, they'll probably have 30 or 40 years without me. They've got to be in a position where they can get the supports they need and find a way to access them. And that's what self-advocacy is all about. And then I apply that to the larger world of, I think we've got close to 9,000 children with an autism spectrum diagnosis or educational identification in Oregon. All of those people, children, and I don't mean to exclude the adults, but everyone needs to learn sufficient self-advocacy skills so that they can get the supports they need to have productive lives and can't rely on a parent to always do it for them or anyone else to do it for them. So that's our ultimate goal at ASO, is to help people get the information they need and the supports they need so that self-advocacy skills can be developed.
ASO is involved in numerous events, resources, programs, and support networks around the state, thanks to its many volunteers, employees, and a board of directors. But something that people might not know is that one of their board members is on the spectrum himself.
My name is Jonathan Chase, and I am autistic, and I work as a mentor and consultant in the autism community.
Jonathan's path to self-advocacy is a unique one, especially for someone with special needs. He was diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome as a freshman in high school, and it wasn't an easy environment for him. Unfortunately, he fell in with the wrong crowd.
My friends, if you can call them that, were not good people. They were not doing good things. They were getting arrested. They were getting into drugs. A lot of them were on a bad path. And those were the only people that accepted me, but I recognized that it wasn't a good direction to go, so my escape was music.
By his sophomore year, Jonathan stopped going to class and eventually dropped out after a year and a half of high school. At that point, all he cared about was music. It made sense to him. School did not.
I didn't get along with the other kids at school. I didn't get along with the teachers. I didn't feel accepted. But as a musician, it was a much more accepting environment. So I got my first bass when I was 14. And I stumbled into a gig when I was 16 and was offered a regular job that paid to play 3 to 4 nights a week. And so I jumped on it and I left school.
It was an easy choice for Jonathan. And fortunately, his parents supported his decision to leave as well.
They were supportive. They were both musicians. My dad used to manage bands, and he worked in radio, and my mom was a folk singer. So they understood, I think, a little more than other families might. But they also recognized that school was not working for me.
After leaving school, Jonathan stayed home and spent all of his time studying music. He found a local musician to be his mentor, kept working hard at the bass, and started working in bands.
I was playing in a blues band. And then when I was 18, I took my first trip to Nashville to study with a number of musicians, including bassist Victor Wooten, studying and performing and learning and recording. And my whole world was wrapped up in music.
Through playing and studying music as a teenager, Jonathan began his transition from a misunderstood kid to an independent adult.
The music industry is a little more accepting of people who are different, but it's also a big challenge because it's a social industry. We don't think of it that way. We usually think that it's all about who's the best player, but it's not. Music is social by nature. We're communicating, and off the stage, it's all social communication. The best skill a working musician has is not playing a lot of notes. It's being able to look a club owner in the eye, shake his hand, and figure out if he's going to pay you or not. Music was my motivation. So I learned that there were social skills I didn't have, and I needed them if I was going to work in the music industry. So I'd practice. I would give myself homework. Every person who comes up to shake my hand after a set, I'm going to look them in the eye while they talk. I'm going to practice shaking hands. I'm going to practice reading their body language and figuring out what they really mean. I'm going to practice being comfortable when a really drunk guy claps his hand on my shoulder because I'm pretty sensitive and that's not a natural situation for me. It's not comfortable unless you're in a bar. And then if you want to work there and be one of the guys, that's something you put up with. I practiced all of those things as a skill.
Jonathan's path to advocacy and independence isn't one that everyone can take, but it's one that worked for him. Over time, he has shifted his work towards becoming a mentor and consultant within the autism community, taking the lessons that he's learned and applying it to the people that need guidance the most. Interestingly enough, his first experience as an advocate for autism came on the trip to Nashville with Victor Wooten, one of the best bass players in the world.
It was a trick. It was an accident. I was at a music camp that Victor was running in Nashville, and he tricked me into getting up in front of everyone. He said that we had these guest speakers coming in, and he got us all excited. And when we showed up at the lodge, there were just empty chairs. And he pulled us out of this big group of students and said, "These are your speakers." And he just dumped us up in front of everyone and left. And we're all alone in front of 100 musicians from all over the world. And there's Victor Wooten and Steve Bailey and all my favorite musicians. And I said, what are we supposed to talk about? And he said, anything you want. The night is yours. And he walked away. I was terrified. I'd never been a speaker in my life. In fact, in school, I wouldn't raise my hand to answer questions because I didn't want all those eyeballs on me. But there I was in front of all these musicians out in the middle of nowhere with no escape. And I thought the one thing you can't talk about to a group of bass players is music. So what am I supposed to do? So I started speaking about autism, about my diagnosis, about the journey, and about what it's like to be a musician with social struggles in a business that's completely dependent on your social skills. And afterwards, I had a good response, and I connected with a number of musicians out there on that topic. And I came back to Portland, and I felt like I was drawn to it, that it was something I could do again. So it just happened that shortly after, there was an opening on the board of directors for the Autism Society of Oregon. And at the same time, there was a local filmmaker doing a documentary about people on the autism spectrum. And so I jumped on both of those opportunities, and that led me to what I do now, a slow transition through the nonprofit world into the professional world and out of the music industry.
Though his days as a professional musician are behind him, Jonathan's mission to help others live beyond their diagnosis was born from that life. But he says that doesn't mean he's figured everything out.
I learn something every time that I go out with a client or every time I sit down with a family, but I have big picture approaches and I like to experiment. And I think that's the key for what I offer. I'm not trying to compete with therapists or autism specialists or teachers. I'm trying to bring in something that's experimenting, trying new things, taking a leap of faith, experimenting and seeing what'll happen, because we don't know. Overall, as a mentor, I call it an open door approach. I like to open doors for people and give them the opportunity to step through and try something new. They don't have to, and I'm not going to force them through, but I believe that if I open that door over and over again, sooner or later, they're going to surprise me. And just stepping through whatever happens, I see that as a success.
Thanks to everyone involved in this episode for sharing their thoughts and stories. Ryan Lockhart, John and Karen Krecha, Rob and Colleen Thompson, Toby Rates, and Jonathan Chase. Our program was produced by Alex Ward at Pangateam Studios with music provided by Jonathan Chase. Yes, that Jonathan Chase. Join us for our next episode in which we'll be exploring the different types of mentorship and therapy available to the special needs community and how they can be valuable for leading an empowered and independent life. I'm Eric Spindt. Thanks for joining us.
This program has been brought to you by the MassMutual Oregon Special Care Planning Team. For more information and resources about special needs planning, please visit us on our website at oregon.massmutual.com or look for us on Facebook under MassMutual Oregon Special Care. If you'd like to reach out to us, you can contact Alyssa Bosley at 503-542-9477.